your names. Welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast, a podcast, in fact, that was once upon a time called Soccer Republic Extra, but no more. And today we're feeling a little bit nostalgic. Soccer Republic, of course, as mentioned last week and discussed with RT's Group Head of Sport, Declan McBennett, will not be returning. So we thought we'd gather up some of the old band, get the band back together for one night only and reminisce about Soccer Republic. And of course, before that, M&S, Monday Night Soccer. So over the next wee while, we'll be chatting to the likes of Johnny McDonald, Dave Barry, Alan Cawley, and some of the presenters as well. Con Murphy, who set the ball rolling. Also Tony O'Donoghue, very much an integral part of M&S and Soccer Republic. And of course, James O'Toole. James, my old mate, were you there right from the get-go, from the very first M&S?
Yeah, I was. I was there from the very, very, very first one, way back in March 2008. I'm just thinking now, Adrian, what are you going to introduce me as now? Because it was always Soccer Republic's James O'Toole. We'll have to come up with something different now.
TV executive, or, yeah. What would you like to be? What? Give us a job title. What
I don't would you know. Like? Don't. We'll put it out to a Twitter poll, I'd say. It might not be publishable.
Yeah. Con Murphy, who hosted the very first M&S, is on the line, and so too Tony O'Donoghue. Con, take us back to March 2008, your recollections.
Do you know, the funny thing is, Adrian, I had to check back to see when M&S started. I genuinely couldn't remember, and when I saw that it was 13 years ago this month, I just couldn't believe it. It's gone by in a flash. But for me, it was great. It was Glenn Killane who was the head of TV Sport at the time, and he spoke to me and said, would you be interested in doing this League of Ireland magazine programme? And it was like somebody asking a child, would they like the keys to the sweet shop? Because for me, that was a dream job. You know, I've loved the league all my life. I've been going to matches all my life. And suddenly to be presenting this magazine show with, you know, legends coming in on the panel, it was a dream job, and we had such great fun doing it. You know, we had a great team. The likes of James in the background, Eamon Donoghue, Kevin Brannigan, the editor, Steve Caffrey, who kind of encouraged this slightly bold boy down the back of the class attitude amongst the team. And, you know, Tony, at the beginning, Tony O'Donoghue, doing those wonderful reports, you know, the likes of travelling from Cork up to Derry with the fans and the behind-the-scenes stuff, which I think sometimes I miss nowadays. But it was great fun. And it was, as I say, when I was asked to do it, I jumped at the chance because it was a real dream for me.
And do you recall who was on the panel with you that very first night? Who were the guests?
Oh, God, that's a six-mark question. Yeah. I'll tell you what I do recall. Steve, in his wisdom, decided that I should sit in the middle on the couch and have the panellists on either side. I think Damien Richardson might have been one of them. Maybe Pat Morley, I can't remember. But yeah, we had remote cameras in the studio. The studio, by the way, was absolutely tiny. People watching in on television wouldn't realise how small that studio was that we were operating out of. It would be smaller than most people's front room. And we were using remote cameras because basically there wasn't room for cameramen to get into this tiny little studio. And because I was sitting between the two panelists, I found it really hard to know which camera was going to be used next. It was a very unconventional setup of a studio. So I remember I fluffed it up at the end and I spoke into the wrong camera. And that was my one recollection of the first program, that I kind of had a laugh at the end, not getting the right camera. We eventually, as the weeks went by, sorted that out. But it was it was a bit strange. I remember Russell Harty, when he was sitting in the middle between Grace Jones and some old fellow, and Grace Jones started bashing him on his back because he turned his back to her. And I was really conscious that night to try and not turn my back on one of the panellists, because the last thing I wanted was Damien Richardson whacking me on the back, telling me to stop ignoring him. But no, that was the first one. And you know, they went back and flashed by in jig time since then. You know, it's really hard to believe that it's 13 years ago. You know, there are kids now who go to matches who'd have no recollection, or weren't even born back then. You know, it's hard to believe.
Yeah. And it was always live, was it?
It was live, I would say, 95% of the time. There was maybe one or two pre-records, but by and large, it was always live, which gave you that slight element of danger about it, you know, especially with some of the panelists that we had who were quite opinionated and were liable to say stuff that would kind of create a bit of a stir. And I do remember on one occasion, Roddy talked about a particular player in a match, and he described him as a chief. And in the soccer vernacular, you know, a player who's accused of cheating is basically, I suppose, being accused of being a bit lazy. There was no actual allegation that this particular individual was a cheat at all. But I remember the next day, I spent about an hour on the phone with that player, walking around the grounds of RTE, trying to talk him down and tell him not to take any... He had his own business and he took real offence to this. And so there was always that kind of thing. I remember one night as well, Damien Richardson had a right old barney with Roddy. It was great TV. You know, when they had that fight, it was a genuine, not a physical fight, but when they had that argument in the studio, it was a genuine argument. And there was a genuine, I think, dislike between the two panellists, which, again, just gave the programme a little bit of edge. And it was something that, as a presenter, it was a dream situation. You just sit back and let them at it. And it's great TV, you know.
Tony, you performed several roles on the programme, you know, reporting, you know, as Con mentioned there, travelling with the fans, you presented the programme, you did all sorts. What was your preferred role?
Oh, I liked being out on the road, definitely, and I think with the fans and in the studio as well then, because as Con was saying there, there was a terrific camaraderie among everyone working on that show. I mean, I think some of the arguments that Con talks about on air, well, the arguments pre-show and post-show were much better, and they would have made a great TV programme in themselves, because you had a team, basically, of people who were passionately interested in the game, in football in this country, and who still are, by the way. And that's why I think it's very sad that we've had to see the programme go. And that's a discussion we can get onto, if you like, or for another day. But the live element was really important. I remember one time being in the chair, was when we moved around the slots with the show, and it was a late night edition. And it was two of our guests that night were Brian Kerr and Fran Gavin. And Fran was talking about having created the atmosphere, the success of the likes of Dundalk. And Brian Kerr wasn't having any of that, and what a row that was. And I mean, that goes down in history, and certainly in Google land as one of the better slanging matches, if you like, because people who, you know, hold their views trenchantly but believe them fairly and want to back up those views. So I think it's a pity that that element got lost, but we have to acknowledge the fact that even from the very beginning, the viewing figures were low. Now, As you say, it's 13 years ago. We came at it, and I'll have to give Steve Caffrey great credit there. There was lots of, you know, ingenuity. There were lots of features. You remember the things we do? We'd bring cameras out. Sure, James, you did lots of this, bringing cameras out to the grounds and doing Thunderstrike, or getting players to try and hit the crossbar challenge, or the 60 with Jackie Hurley doing the quiz
brilliant.
Questions.
Yeah.
It was superb, yeah. And more laterally, Marie Crowe went out with James and did lots of features as well. I mean, I remember on the very first show, taking the longest journey in Irish football, Cove Ramblers travelling to Finn Harps, Ballybofey. And that was a marathon in more ways than one, but it was great fun to do. But you see, these sort of things are time expensive, and to do games and do features and to edit them properly and add a bit of polish and shine to them, it doesn't come easy. And I know there's been a terrible reaction to the news that Soccer Republic is coming off the air, but, you know, from the very beginning, much as we tried all sorts of things, the figures aren't there. So I was looking back, even in 2008, after the first year, Emmett Malone reported in the Irish Times that MNS faces budget cuts. Now, it was unfortunate that RTE, like our entire economy, almost went belly up and things were very bad. But, you know, we had to start looking at cuts from the very beginning. Viewing figures at that stage were about 60,000, but slipped down to 43,000, or 3% of what RTE2 was averaging at the time. So we were always hoping to grow the show. And it wasn't brilliant that at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, it was up against, let's say, Coronation Street or Fair City. And, you know, we're only talking 13 years ago, but there wasn't, you know, the same ability to record programmes and watch them when you wish. And so if you only had one telly in a house, you weren't going to be watching M&S. So we tried to put it back later. But what we wanted to do with a lot of those features was to get young people interested and try and make stars of our League of Ireland players. And I mean, a lot of the times we did. I mean, one of those 60s was funny with Jackie and Ryan Guy. Remember Ryan Guy? He had in that 60-second interview with Jackie, he revealed that he drove a 94 Honda Civic. And his favourite biscuits were McVitie's chocolates, remember? So can you imagine the slagging he got the next game he had to play? So there was a lot of fun. There was a hell of a lot of fun, great camaraderie and a great team. So, I mean, I'll definitely miss that. But the harsh reality of figures and costs. I do think in the meantime, you know, you look back. One of the things that was mentioned in that article as well by Emmett Malone at the time was that maybe the title race was too predictable that year. And so at the beginning of M&S's run, Bows were doing well, then Rovers did well for a while, and the other Rovers, Sligo, did well. Pats had the league victory. But then we had the Dundalk, 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 Cork, Dundalk, Dundalk. And you'd wonder, did that in a sense, kind of take some of the drama out of the title race, in a sense?
Yeah. James, we should, of course, point out and acknowledge that, you know, M&S didn't invent coverage of football in this country because it was a forerunner with TV3's Aircom League Weekly. But what are your recollections of working on the programme down through the years? And as Tony mentioned there, you tried to be innovative at times and, you know, make stars out of players. Certainly in the early years, that was very much to the fore. Latterly, not so much. But, you know, when you sum up and assess Soccer Republic and its predecessor, M&S, do you think both programmes are both formats had an impact on football in this country? Or as Tony suggested, you know, the figures never quite tallied and therefore it didn't quite hit the mark.
Yeah, the figures didn't really hit the mark. Before we go any further, we have to mention Steve Finn as well. Steve Finn was part of our initial group that started up with Soccer Republic. Like, you have to remember, we were the first show, I think, in RTE Sport where a specific team was put together just to look after that show. Their job was just one show, whereas across RTE Sport, you have people who jump between the rugby, the GAA and stuff like that. This is the first time this had really ever been done. Did it impact? I think the timing of the show probably didn't help, as Tony mentioned, the Monday evening. I think if we had, it could have got out on a Saturday evening or even a Sunday lunchtime kind of time. Even, I know most people probably won't look at the telly that time, but the figures didn't really stand up. We tried stuff. We tried a lot of stuff. Like, I remember one in particular, we tried to do a Speed King before Thunderstrike came along, where we tried to go to clubs and have a length of the pitch sprint race. That lasted one shoot in Sligo, where Keith Foy decided that jumping on people was a lot more fun than actually doing the running part of it. So that idea lasted one shoot, and that was it. But yeah,
what about
we tried some bizarre
races?
Stuff. The mascot race, yeah, I remember the mascot race. I'll never let Conan Byrne live the mascot race down. That's regularly brought up with Conan Byrne. There was other stuff that we tried. Just sometimes it just didn't work. And it was funny, as Con mentioned earlier about the live aspect of the show. Like, it's... The room I'm sitting in right now is probably bigger than the studio the guys were in. And that's plain and simple. But because it was live, it meant it was a quick dash. We had guys coming in from work. And I remember one show where I think we were 2 minutes from air or 5 minutes from air, and we still had panelists stuck in a lift in RTE because one of the panelists decided to say, I wonder what it'd be like. What would happen if you jumped up and down the lift? And sure enough, the lift broke.
Oh, you got to name names now. Yeah. No more than Colin, the player who was accused of cheating. We need to know these things. Time has passed.
Another player that had a slight dig at turned out to be one of our pundits. He ended up being one of our pundits. So, no, that was Dave Barry was in the lift. Roddy Collins was in the lift. I think Kevin Branigan might have actually been bringing them down to studio that night, and the lift broke. So there's been several like that. And as well as the live aspect, every show, I think, in our first two or three series were live, bar one. And that was an end-of-season show where we pre-recorded it because of a conflict with a match or something like that. So we'd finished it. Our season was over. We were out watching the match in a in an establishment, and we got a phone call to say there was no Soccer Republic on because it had just gone to black. So that was our first and last one that we did that wasn't live, as far as Monday Night Soccer was concerned.
Con, I have to say, the end of season program, the one that James has just talked about, where basically all the pundits were brought in, and you know, they picked their team of the year and pick out their highlights or their goals or whatever it was. That was a fantastic end to every season, I thought.
Yeah, it was. And again, because we were operating in such a small studio, we couldn't get everybody in at the same time. So everybody sort of came in shifts, if you like, in different parts of the program. But apart from the panelists coming in and kind of reviewing the season and, you know, getting the word from everybody, there was always a sort of a VT as well. Like, I remember one year we went to Inchicore and we got all the panelists and the presenters actually to do a sort of a karaoke. And we had the likes of Johnny McDonald and Dave Barry doing Deeply Dippy, it was by Right Said Fred. And, you know, that kind of stuff. Roddy did his, I think he was Elvis or somebody like that. And there was just a bit of fun about the thing.
I think you find that I was Elvis.
Oh, were you Elvis? well, who was Roddy then? I don't know. But I was stoked anyway from Madness. That's all I remember. But, you know, that kind of thing. And Tony mentioned the 60-second quiz with Jackie Hurley. I mean, I think the favourite question that I heard her asking was, she was interviewing Barry Murphy, and there were these quick-fire questions for anybody who hadn't seen them before. And her question to Barry Murphy was, what's your favourite humming noise? And it was just, his face was a picture. So there was that element of kind of fun about the thing. Although the analysis was also very serious, you know. And I mean, I'm not 100% sure of this, but I think we might have given a young lad called Richie Sadler his debut as a football analyst on M&S. And yet the likes of, you know, Pat Dolan, you know, really big figures in the game, Roddy, Rico. Kenny Cunningham came in. I don't know, maybe it was the second season when Kenny came on board, but his analysis and the homework he put into it was so impressive. He got to know every player in the league straight away, which was so impressive. He worked really hard on it, and I was so impressed with him.
And let's not forget Jimmy McGee or the Raiders of the Lost Archives. And Jimmy's going through all the best teams from all the clubs around the league.
And do you know something? The thing about it is people love that. And they still, you know, they talk about it 10 years later. I can't believe, you know, he picked so-and-so at left back or whatever it might be. And it's great, speaking of archives, that will be in the archives from Jimmy's point of view forever. You know, that was because, I mean, Jimmy loved the league as well. So it was great to have a legend like him involved. So I think you had that balance of the crack, but also serious analysis. Obviously, we didn't have 13 cameras at every match like they'd have at a Premier game in England. But we worked with what we had. And I think the guys behind the scenes, the likes of Eamon and James and Kevin and Stephen and so on, did a brilliant job kind of trying to put that all together. And like as you say, Adrian, the end of season finale was always a bit of crack, and there was usually a good laugh afterwards as well when everybody came together and maybe had a lemonade afterwards. So they were good days.
Those were the days, my friend. We also had the cup draws, don't forget. They were either in the studio or they were live on location. We covered the Republic of Ireland team at home and abroad. We were often live from training sessions home or away. There was a lot of stuff like that that covered the whole of Irish football. And there was one series that we also kind of did the Irish abroad. So I remember catching up with Damien Duff that time. He went to play in Australia or Killian Sheridan in Poland at the time, I think, or wherever else he might have been, or various Irish players around. And we did try and kind of all sorts of other innovations. And I think it's worth mentioning as well how important like social media became, because I think in the last 10, 11, 12, 13 years, that's been the biggest thing. I think clubs are standing up for themselves now. At the beginning, if you were trying to cover a match that you weren't at yourself, it was hard to get team sheets. Now you can find that the clubs have upped their game so much and there's more information about teams and they're promoting themselves, because, look, this is a double-edged thing. RTE, as I said before, copped a lot of flack for this decision, but certainly the people that made the programme were so into it, and we tried up and down to make it work and make it interesting. But sometimes, you know, some responsibility must be go to the clubs themselves and the league as well and the FAI. And things have improved. There's no question about that. And I think, you know, clubs have to take into account their own responsibility for promoting themselves in the game as well. And that has improved through social media. I think it was probably a bad thing that in order to keep the property, if you like, to keep what people might want to watch, to improve the viewing figures of a Monday night, there was a time when RT weren't letting those goals go out on a Friday night or a Saturday or whatever, and then you'll find, you know, iPhone copies of that goal when we had a better copy of it going out. And I think we probably should have acknowledged that earlier and welcomed social media into our world, maybe try to change the slot. But don't forget, for our live games, what happens on Friday night still is when you get the goals from the other grounds as well. It's a much more polished product, but all these things cost money. And I'm still hopeful in the wider context of Irish football that you know, all our grounds can begin to look a bit more like Tallaght now, and hopefully the new Bohemians and Turner's Cross, and that we can get floodlights that will actually reflect the game better when they're put on television, because no matter how much you want to put into this, equally the infrastructure has to change to make Irish football look better.
Mr. Deeply Dippy is on the line. Johnny McDonald, how are you?
Hi Adrian, how are you? Remember
Go
well.
On, give us a bit of Deeply Dippy.
I can't remember. I remember the evening well, old Terry. It was down in Inchy Tor. Myself and Dave were putting white T-shirts. I don't think they fit either of us, myself and Dave, but we definitely had a right Fred night. And we done I'm Too Sexy for My Shirt. Good night. We had a bit of laugh that night, as Con said. We had a few good evenings. A few of them were down in Donnybrook, in Coyley's and Donnybrook as well. As Con said, we could add a few Lucas Aves.
Sure, that's gone as well.
Well, the aforementioned Dave Barry is also on the line. Dave, we're talking about getting the old band back together again. What about yourself and Johnny linking up with your white T-shirts?
I tell you, I was stitched up that day, Adrian. There's no doubt about that. I arrived. I had the longest trip, of course, up from Cork. And by the time I got there, they had a small T-shirt or a medium T-shirt, white T-shirt. So they put me into that. I tell you one thing, there was nothing sexy about it.
Dave, I got in ahead of you. I got the first pick.
Here it is, Daddy, as usual.
Well, lads, we've been talking about Soccer Republic and, of course, before that, M&S, and the very first edition, which Con hosted. And I was just looking up the results from that night. St. Patrick's Athletic 3, Sligo Rovers 1. Johnny Mack, you were managing Pats at the time. Do you have any particular memory of that game? There's a reason why I'm asking this.
3-1, was it? Well, who was the manager? 3-1. Was it Sligo?
Yeah.
Paul Cook, the manager?
Yes.
Yeah, they had no gear. Their away gear was clashing, probably. Would that be the right answer?
That's the one. The match didn't get underway until 8:15 because Sligo Rovers forgot to bring their away kit or some such. And I think it might have been a Paddy Power sponsorship.
And imagine Paul Cook ended up the manager of Ipswich. See, no away gear. They wore their blue gear. Their away strip. But we won 3-1. We used to always beat them anyway.
Yeah. Brilliant to remember the full-time score. Just as a matter of interest, the rest of the scores that particular weekend for the very first edition, as it was, of M&S, Pats winning by 3-1. Galway United 0, Bohemians 1. A certain Mr. Neil Fenn got the only goal that evening. Dave, Cork City were held at home by Bray Wanderers 0-0. But I tell you what, when you look back to 2008, March of 2008, some players in the Cork lineup, Liam Kearney, Georgie O'Callaghan, Joe Gambo, the current manager, Colin Healy, Dave Mooney was there, John O'Flynn came off the bench, Dennis Behan as well.
Yeah,
bad
fantastic.
Start that particular
fantastic. Week. I think coming out of after winning the league in 2005, you know, they had some squad that time, and it was fantastic that I suppose the finances were there to keep these players, you know, in the league. I think that's a big problem, really, with keeping our best players here, because the finances aren't there really. But and then what happens then is, you know, clubs stretch themselves and try to keep up with the finances within the club, and you know, they can run into difficulties, as we've seen with Cork City. But as you said, Adrian, there were fantastic days.
James, the opening night of that particular season, UCD 2, Derry City 3. Peter Hutton with the winner.
I was at it.
Were you there?
I remember it very well. I remember the Pats game as well, because I remember the referee was Anthony Buttermer, and the Monday after that we actually brought the two kits into studio to show how ridiculous it was that the two kits clashed.
I think I remember that because there was a little bit
of white in the sleeve of one of them or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
In a North London derby, like, Spurs can play Arsenal, and Arsenal can have the white on their sleeves and the red of the main body of the shirt and still play Spurs wearing all white and never a problem, but it was for us.
Yeah. And interestingly as well, in that Derry game, UCD Derry, Ronan Finn playing for UCD back in 2008, he's come some distance. Drogheda 0, Shamrock Rovers 1. You'll be delighted to hear, Con. Alan Murphy, a new signing for Shamrock Rovers with the only goal. Paul Doolan was managing Drogheda back then. And I love this one. And this is courtesy of extratime.ie. Finn Harps 2, Cove Ramblers 1. But there's a line in the report from the night. And it says, on a night that was far from conducive to playing an attractive brand of football, with the Finn Park turf suffering the effects of heavy rainfall in the northwest, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. So there you have it. Those are the results from the very first weekend of MNS. Johnny, just your recollections of being on the couch. Did you enjoy it, or the fact that it was live, as Con mentioned earlier, you know, was it slightly intimidating as well?
Probably initially when you went in, but I enjoyed it because it's like this. We're just talking about matches we were at, matches that we played in or we were watching. So it was just having a chat, like sitting at the bar and having a chat. I enjoyed every minute of it. It wasn't too intense for me. I really sat down and I enjoyed the hour. Tom was great, you know, with presenting, and he made it feel very relaxed. And we were just having a conversation about what we'd seen the weekend.
And as you mentioned as well, Con, you did mention the fact there that, you know, for all the fun and laughter, at times there was an edge, and that really had people sitting on the edge of their seats, because that little bit of spice in a programme, fans love it. You know, a bit of confrontation and what have you.
I think, you know, Tony was talking there about social media, and I just think we slightly missed the boat in terms of MNS and, you know, Twitter and Facebook and whatever, because I think nowadays, some of the stuff that happened on the programme, if it was clipped up and put out on Twitter, it would drive a lot of traffic towards the programme because it was so edgy. And in a way, we were the best kept secret in town, in that, you know, the hardcore fans were going to watch, but the floaters didn't really know about it, or they were watching a live match on Sky Sports on a Monday night, or they were watching Coronation Street or whatever it might be, which was up against us. But I think those little moments, if we were able to put them out on the night and say, look, this happened tonight, you know, you can watch it back on the RTE player, I think it would have been really good, because there were some great rows and some really funny moments as well that we could have clipped up to. And you know, I think in latter years that was missed with when the panellists weren't being used anymore. Like, I understand the reasoning behind it, especially with the output that was going out in the live matches on a Friday night or whatever. But I think it's pity in a way, because you did lose some of that character and some of that, you know, as Tony was saying, you know, the build-up of the stars in the league and you know, making characters of them. That didn't really happen in latter years, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately, Peter Collins can't be with us for this particular podcast. He was involved in one of the hot topics of the time. Back in May 2014, Liverpool arrived to Dublin to play a friendly. Over 40,000 turned up at the Aviva. And here's what followed on Soccer Republic.
It's absolute shocking. 42,000 morons going to watch Liverpool's reserve team.
But they're Liverpool fans, aren't they entitled to go along and see them?
How many fans of Liverpool get to watch the reserve team? 42,000 people, 42,500 people.
So do you think in a way they were sold a pup?
Absolutely. And they deserve to go. They deserve to pay the money. They deserve anything to get, as far as I'm concerned. It's. I do not understand how Irish people cannot support an Irish league. I really, it's beyond me, it baffles me. But if you parachuted half of that, or most of that crowd into Liverpool, they wouldn't be able to find a way to Anfield.
OK, but, I mean, aren't people entitled to support a team in England, a team in Spain, a team wherever they want, along with a team in the Republic of Ireland?
Absolutely. Where it goes hand in hand, that's perfect. I have no objection to that at all. Many people. support the league here and also support English sides because of the Sky television, that's fine. But the majority of those people that you heard there supporting Liverpool don't go to League of Ireland matches. And that's an awful shame.
Yeah. Richie, do you think Dermot's points are valid in relation to the supporters who went along there? Because obviously an awful lot of those supporters support Liverpool alone and they don't follow Irish football. So should issue be taken with them?
No. They're Irish people who liked football, who showed up to a match that the team they support played. Some of them might go to Anfield, some not. It's their own business. The notion that Irish people, just by virtue of their Irishness, should support Irish football, I think that's the point Dermot just made. That ignores then any discussion on things like we mentioned, facilities or the standard of play or how clubs are run or how attractive the thing is. If you simplify it to, well, they're Irish, therefore go. I think it's far more complex than that. People find far more reasons to attach themselves to a football team other than the fact that, well, they play in this country. This isn't even a professional league. If we're going to have a discussion about professional football and the facilities or the standard or all the things, then this country can't be a part of that conversation because there is not one professional football league in this country.
Yeah, so when you're asking,
it's the PR stuff or the marketing of the Premier League. If you removed all of that, this league still isn't good enough for a lot of people who like football. And as you said, people have choices. They're exposed to football.
I accept totally that this league isn't a match for any league, for the Premier League or for the Spanish League, fine. But it's our league.
But so why criticise people for not supporting them?
What I've already said, I don't object to them supporting. They can go if they support.
You call them morons for going to the game the other night.
To watch Liverpool reserves.
And that's not criticism?
It's the plain truth.
The cut and thrust of Soccer Republic. Dermot Keighley in action there. Richie Sadlier, you'll be familiar with his voice. And I guess, Tony, we're talking about, you know, moments over the years in terms of M&S and more recently Soccer Republic. Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, I have the utmost regard for Dermot Keighley, what a League of Ireland legend. And equally, Richie Sadlier just proved what a good pundit he is there and how logical his argument was. And I would hazard a guess that that argument continued probably in the pub afterwards, which doesn't happen, sadly, on social media because, you know, two fellas who really believed in what they said, and I thought Richie's logic was, you know, irrefutable, to be honest with you. But Dermot's passion shines through as ever. That's a fantastic exchange. And those are the sort of things I think that Con was talking about. You clip that up and you show that to young people nowadays.
Yeah. And sadly, Dave Barry, not a lot has changed. I mean, you know, Soccer Republic is going by the boards. You know, in terms of coverage of football in this country, there'll be no real output in terms of, you know, debate or a location for debate about issues that affect football in this country, which is something that has to be, you know, reckoned with. But in terms of football, I guess it just underlines once again that football hasn't really progressed over the years. You know, when you see a program like Soccer Republic with dwindling audiences, as we mentioned earlier on, and the league in general, just continuing to go from year to year, but no magical increase in terms of attendance. It's a bit of a concern, isn't it?
It is a massive concern. And I think, you know, if you're in the top two, top three, you know, people got huge crowds down at Turner's Cross over the last number of years when they were going well, you know, especially 2017 when they won the double. But you have to say when the quality drops off, the crowds drop off. That's the reality. I was just listening to Dermot and Richie there, but it brought me back to the ban where people were stopped going to see games or people said you shouldn't go here or you shouldn't go there. I think really I agree with you know what Richie was saying. I think, you know, people should go. Like we all watch the Premier League. We're all fascinated with the Premier League. We all have our teams over there. But I think definitely people could go out and support the league more. There's nothing like live soccer, and at this stage, when there's no live soccer, you really appreciate how you missed it. And it's not just going to the games; it's meeting guys after the game, having a pint afterwards, and discussing all the clubs in the league and how it's going. But you know, the finance. That's how I get back to that. It's grand when clubs put their they are putting their neck on the block really to go professional and push it. But unfortunately, when you look at the top four, they're making money, but everybody else is going to struggle.
But Johnny, isn't it symptomatic of the way football is viewed upon in this country? But it's a huge participation sport. But yet, the League of Ireland is struggling. Now, admittedly, COVID has affected so much, but leaving COVID aside, even back to, you know, pre-COVID days, you know, attendances at games and the fact that there isn't an audience for a programme like Soccer Republic, you know, the game in this country hasn't really developed, or as Richie mentioned in that clip a few moments ago, been marketed sufficiently, because, you know, those of us that are here on this podcast, we're converted, we're League of Ireland fans, but for an awful lot of people, they look upon it and they compare it to the English Premier League and they say it's no contest.
But there's no comparison, is there, Adrian, you know, with the Premier League? But we should have a standard. I agree with Dara and Richie, both sides of that argument. You know, the passion and the logic, you know, of Richie and the passion of Dara. But look, when the product is there, when we produce the product with the European matches, the fans will come out. There's no doubt they will come out when the product is good. And when we get to the latter stages or just about to qualify for league stages, Europa League or Champions League, or, you know, and you draw an AC Milan or a Liverpool or a Spurs or whatever it might be, when the product is there, the people will come out. But to consistently supply that product, the stadia have come on, some of them, but not them all. Yeah, so there is movement in some ways and not in others. The one thing I find is great is that, you know, maybe the younger players are staying now in Ireland. We're setting up academies, so the younger players probably will stay in Ireland till 18 or 19. They're not going to 15 and 16. So we might be producing better players, so the product might get better and might take a little bit of time. So, you know, that's one positive I would see, younger players playing in the league here. And as I said, if the product is there, the people will come out. They absolutely have proven that.
Adrian, could I come in on that as well? Because this time last year, RTE's, I don't know if it was the last live match they showed before the crowds were stopped from going to the games, but the match in Tallaght between Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, I think, was an example of what Irish football could be at some point in the hopefully not too distant future. I mean, you'd have sold out Tallaght, 8,500 people at the match. You could have got more in. There was more demand, but the ground was full. There was a brilliant match live on TV, great coverage. And for me, that was just the moment where I thought, this is what it could be. You know, it was a good stadium. Proper floodlights, look good on TV, two excellent teams playing great football. We had a goal in that match, which was a contender for the Puskas. And it's also a feeling I get every time, for example, Shamrock Rovers play Bohemians. There's a sellout, there's a demand for tickets, there's a desire. And part of that, I think, is driven by social media again, just in the build-up to those games. The clubs do a great job. I think the FAI are talking about putting more money into marketing, and that's such a key factor in all of this. So I think, yes, the facilities have to improve in a lot of places, but where, and it bears out what Johnny was saying, where the product is good and the background is good in terms of the stadium, I think you can see that there is, you know, there is this bubbling desire underneath for people to go and watch live football when it's good. And that match that night in Tallaght, for me, was a real moment.
That Jordan Flores goal was exceptional, and I think that was viewed millions, literally millions of times on social media around the world. So, again, I guess reflecting the point of that. Look, M&S and latterly Soccer Republic did survive through a world economic crash that particularly affected Ireland and made it as far as a global pandemic and COVID-19. And I think it's important to remember still that, you know, RTE is still committed to League of Ireland football, and there will be an awful lot of live football, League of Ireland football on this season for RTE. So instead of all the bashing and the Twitter hate, to just see that there have been improvements, and there's, I think, as this podcast shows, there's an awful lot of people within and without RTE who are very committed and very passionate about Irish football, and that commitment and that passion will continue.
I personally can't wait for people to stop telling us that we were a Shamrock Rovers show. I have to say, every week we got that, oh, you're just a Shamrock Rovers show, you're just a Shamrock Rovers show. And Con was the actual only Rovers member of the panel.
Totally Barry, unbiased.
You can speak the truth here, Dave. You can vouch for what James is saying, I'm sure.
There's everybody wants to see their team on the TV, but you know, you have to say, look, Shamrock Rovers are the biggest name in League of Ireland soccer, and you know, they've proved it now again, the way they've reinvented themselves and come back to the top of the league. That's the way it goes. But You know, there's Conor's a massive Shamrock Rovers fan, even though, you know, he mightn't be on the show some weeks, but he's out watching Rovers. So, you know, that's what you were. They're the kind of people you had on the show, people who are genuine supporters of the league and who love it. And whether there's 100 people in there or 10,000 people in there, you know, you're going to get people who love the league and go out and support it.
Yeah, lads, thanks for joining us. Dave Barry and Johnny McDonald, Con and Tony are going to stay with us. Con, I just jotted down a few of the pundits, the likes of Liam Coyle, Declan Devine, we'll hopefully be chatting to Alan Cawley shortly. But there are others as well. Sean Prunty, Colm Foley, yep. James perhaps can add in a few more. Obviously, the aforementioned Roddy. Was there anybody more articulate or erudite than Damien Richardson?
He had one contender, I think, Tony McDonald, who was very articulate, always wore... He was the only person who dressed down to go on TV, because he used to arrive in from work in his suit and tie, and then he'd take them off and throw the jeans on to come into the studio with us. But in terms of eloquence and vernacular... I think Damien was hard to beat, all right. But his knowledge of the game as well. Damien, you know, from his years in England with Gillingham and stuff, he had a great knowledge of the game. And I was always fascinated. And you know, I love talking to all the panellists who came from, you know, northwest, east and south of the country. And, like, it's a real pleasure to be able to sit on a couch and just know that you can ask these guys anything about the games and, you know, sort of their font of knowledge is shared with us all. And we've some smashing panelists down through the years, I must say. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, Brian Kerr, of course, top notch as well.
Superb. You know, absolutely, yeah. And it was a real mix of age groups and, you know, the likes of Sean Prunty, who had only just stopped playing, and Alan Cawley likewise. And then you the elder lemons as well, the likes of Damien, and he won't thank me for that probably. I really, really enjoyed chatting with them all.
Yeah, if there's a criticism, I'm sure there've been lots of criticisms of the show over the years. The women's game, Tony, perhaps wasn't reflected. Would that be fair?
I think it's very fair. Yeah, and I think we have yet to. Make any decent fist of trying to, reflect the stars in the women's game. I think there has been some move in that regard by the way we've covered the national team. But thankfully, so many of our top players have moved abroad now and are playing professionally in top leagues. And hopefully our own league can continue to improve because I think it is improving. Yeah, I mean, this is another chicken and egg situation. You have to try and show support to the league and show support to the competition. And hopefully more and more female players will be more known and become marketable sports stars in their own country over the next few seasons, hopefully.
Yeah. Con, when you said there that Tony McDonald was the most fashionable man that arrived at the studios, you obviously forgot about Alan Cawley as well because he's on the line. You want to just say something to him there?
I'm disappointed with that one, Con.
Well, you ran him a close second, Alan.
No, I'd like there to think I've difference. Overtaken him now at this stage, Con.
There was a massive difference though, Adrian, because Tony came and he dressed himself, whereas Alan has someone who dresses him, so it's completely different.
It's the modern world we live in, you know, we're brands now.
Alan, do you have any recollection when you started? I mean, we were talking about M&S starting in 2008, and obviously I think Soccer Republic kicked in around about 2014. So when did you make your debut on the couch?
I was only chatting to someone about this the other day, Adrian, and I made my debut on the 5th of April 2013, and it was a debut I'll never ever forget, because when I was a player, I was kind of, I don't know if I was unusual, but in the sense that I used to love doing interviews. So Eamon Collins gave me this kind of nickname when we were at Shells, and it stuck, Quotesy. And the reason being, I remember coming in one morning, saying, "Hey, Quotesy, every time I open up the paper, you have a different quote in it." And it kind of stuck then, Quotesy, the boys were calling me. So I used to love, even when I watched matches back then, I used to love the analysis side of things. And I always had a keen interest in doing that kind of thing. So I suppose Steve Caffrey would tell you when I finished up, I had him tortured for a period of time trying to get on the show and stuff. And I started writing the column initially, and that progressed there, obviously, to get me chance on the show, and the boys were good enough to give me the opportunity. But the very first night I went on, Con was actually presenting, and I think it was Dave Barry I was on with. But I remember looking back on it, and I often tell people this story. I was like a nodding dog, you know, in the back of a car when you see the little dog and nod the head. Because as Con was asking me the question, and what people didn't realise, live TV, which can be daunting enough, and the studio, even though at home people think you're in this glamorous studio, now obviously it's evolved since, and we have been in the big studios. But back then I remember the studio being really small. And as Con was asking me the question, my head was going literally like a nodding dog, not before I even answered. So I remember going home looking at it, saying, what were you doing? But thankfully, I'd like to think I've improved since then. But that was my first memory. And Con, the boys were great. I remember being on a month later with Kenny Cunningham, which was a huge honour for me to be on with Kenny. And I remember Kenny being brilliant with me at the time. And it's progressed from there, Adrian, yeah, 2013. And as I say, I'd like to think I've gotten a little bit better. But the love has always been there for it, and it still is every bit as much as what it was back then.
Yeah, you've obviously had some very memorable TV moments over the years, but can anything ever top Karaoke King?
Well, that's another thing that might be unusual, because I was on Karaoke King singing, and then I was obviously in the studio as a pundit. The other one that sticks out is the bit of a row with Trevor Crowley as well, and that was a frosty situation, but one which...
Remind us about that.
Yeah, it was just around the time when Shamrock Rovers... Trevor was obviously the manager, and Shamrock Rovers were struggling at the time. And this had been building up for a few weeks, the run of form, and I suppose the pattern of games, and Trevor was chopping and changing with the team and not getting results. So I remember being at the game Friday night, and basically I let the pattern build up, I suppose, of watching the games. It wasn't a knee-jerk reaction. I had thought long and hard about it, and after being at the game that Friday night, I remember going on and doing my research over the weekend, thinking things are just not right there and it's not working out and it's not being good, whatever. And Trevor came out with the interview and obviously was trying to give his side of things after the match on the Friday night. And I was quite critical of them on the show Monday night, but being honest in how I seen it. And obviously Trevor took exception to that, but the following week he got sacked, which was obviously nothing to do with me. But then Trevor came on the following week and I was back on with him, and I wasn't sure how Trevor was going to react. I never had any dealings with Trevor before, and the one thing I've learned, and the one thing, little rule I had, Adrian, I suppose from the start when I started out doing this, was I would never be personal, and I would never be knee-jerk, I suppose. I'd have my research done and be informed, and I'd like to think I still maintain that. But Trevor, of course, took exception to the criticism, and it ended up him coming on the Monday night the following week, and it was frosty, to say the least. But then we actually met up afterwards, and we had a discussion and chat about it. And then Trevor came working on the show the following year, and he was brilliant. And I'd like to think we're friends now. So that was another one that kind of memory over the years.
Well, I guess, yeah, it's part of punditry, isn't it, that you have to call it as you see it. And yet Ireland is a small country. The football community here is quite small, so the impact, you know, that can carry some
weight.
Yeah,
because especially, Adrian, I kind of, a lot of lads that I would have played with at the time, I finished up quite young, and of course they went down the road of the coaching and the management, and there's a lot of lads that are obviously young managers in the league now that I would have played with. So for me initially to go out on the road, I did, writing the column, I remember people probably thinking at the start, like, what's this lad doing, or what's he saying? But I've always maintained that I'd be honest and be informed. And the first few weeks of the column, I remember falling out with Colin Hawkins and Kevin Doherty, too, be good pals. Kevin Doherty is probably my best friend in football. But Kevin took exception. He was assistant manager at the time with Shelburne, took exception to a column. And we didn't speak for 6 weeks. And it was the two women who ended up getting us together to say, look, will you just sort this out and put it behind you or whatever. So that is par for the course. But I've never had any problem with that, Adrian, because, as I say, once you remain factual and be informed, people can either agree with you or disagree with you, but I'd never be personal.
We're going to wrap it up very shortly, lads, but Tony, we'll get your overall reflections on Soccer Republic, M&S, but we mentioned that the dwindling figures, viewing figures. There's now no, and Declan McBenham was on the programme last week, or on the podcast last week, and he mentioned that there are other broadcasters in the country who may be in a position or interested in taking up the role of covering football on a weekly basis, that, you know, that has contributors like Alan, and, you know, can assess where the game is at. But it's not one for RT at the moment, and hence Soccer Republic, which was already pared back to effectively a goal show, that will no longer be continuing. The fact that there isn't that kind of forum for issues, footballing issues, to be discussed, how big a loss is that?
Well, I think it's a huge loss, and I think even our little scroll down memory lane here shows how many good memories we have, and how many, and it's only what, 13 years, a lot of football under the bridge, an awful lot of stories, an awful lot of things to reflect on, and I think there has to be a market for that. I'm certain there is. Now, in terms of the figures, well, you know, not all broadcasting should be about figures either, because public service is about doing something for the service of the public. It's about, you know, providing an opportunity for a part of Irish society to reflect on itself. And football in this country is a huge part of Irish society, and I would like to think it's getting bigger. It's more acknowledged, and I would like to think with the government support, etc., that the game will grow and will become a fully professional outfit. And along with that, I think there's absolutely room for a discussion programme, a magazine programme, across whatever platform, across all platforms, maybe not necessarily mainstream, old-fashioned, linear television, but there's all other options. Now, that's why I make the point that social media is so important. But what you need, and what we had in MNS and Soccer Republic, was people who loved their job, who believed in doing it to the best of their ability, and, you know, who would continue, I think, to put as much as they could, their heart and soul, into Irish football, because it's something they believe in.
And Colin, you said at the outset, you know, when you got the gig, you were like a kid at Christmas, so you must have very special memories of your time involved with the M&S in particular.
Yeah, the funny thing, I was thinking about it, Adrian, and I was very fortunate to cover, you know, Olympic Games for RTE. I covered a myriad of different sports, rugby, horse racing, hockey, you name it. But there's no doubt about it that the most enjoyable thing that I did was M&S. And part of that was down to Steve Caffrey, the editor, and everybody else who worked on the programme, because there was this great camaraderie. And when I mentioned that, you know, the feeling was there was a slight element of boys down, you know, the naughty boys down the back of the class, that was encouraged. And so there was a great esprit de corps amongst everybody who was involved in the program. And of course, for me, I was working on something that I absolutely loved. And I know James mentioned that we got a bit of stick occasionally from people thinking that we were focusing too much on Shamrock Rovers. It just so happens that in two of those seasons, Rovers won the league. And generally, the team that win the league are the team that will, you know, garner the most coverage and output, and you know, as the years went by, Cork and Dundalk would have dominated and got more coverage than the other teams as well. So that was just the way it goes. But for me, it was, as I say, if somebody had said to me, "What's your dream job?" That would have ticked the box for me, because I was working with great people. We had a laugh. We took the job seriously, though. We worked hard. And when I'm writing my memoirs in 50 years' time, M&S will definitely get a very big chapter, and it'll be one where I look back on it with great fondness.
And will James O'Toole be fondly remembered in it?
No way. He won't get a mention. No. No, James is great. And again, coming back to what Tony was saying, you know, Adrian, I think your profile pic on RTE, you're wearing a Sligo Rovers fan, a scarf. James is a dyed-in-the-wool Derry City fan. Cork City flows through Tony's veins as well. Obviously, you know, I was going to Shamrock Rovers matches since I was a child, and Eamon Donoghue was a great Longford fan, and Kevin Brannigan, a Bohemian fan. Like, the people who were involved in the programme were fans of the league, and for all the stick and the criticism that was thrown our way down through the years, I think people need to remember that everybody who was involved had the best interests of the league at heart and did love it. But sometimes you have to be honest as well about things where, you know, things don't come up to scratch, whether that is facilities at grounds or the standard of pitches or whatever it might be. If a game is a bad game, I think you've got to call it rather than try and gloss over it. And I think generally we did that. But behind it all, we love the league.
Okay, lads, listen, great days. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for bringing back all those memories of M&S and, of course, more recently, Soccer Republic. Thanks to Con Murphy, Tony O'Donoghue, before that, Dave Barry, Jenna McDonald, and Alan Cawley as well. From James and myself, Adrian Eames. Until the next time, bye-bye.